As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This is The Athletic Hockey Show.
Good morning. This is the Thursday show. It's not Friday or whatever phony names we were trying to push it for a while. Same day, every week, the rest of our lives. I'm Sean Tinselli. Max Bowman's here. Haley Salvian is on assignment in Utica, New York. She's at Women's Worlds. Games there started yesterday. Still kind of in the early stages. Team USA played last night. Layla Edwards became the first black player to see an actual international game in the history of the program, which is extremely cool. And Haley wrote a really nice preview for the tournament overall. If you folks are interested, check that out. It's on the site. We're going to have more from her. My God, it's been going on for a day. So there's 13, 14 more days of games and coming from Utica. So there'll be plenty of opportunity to talk about that. She's busy and out. So it's just me and Max. Maxie, how we doing?
Hey, aren't you that Wings for the Game guy?
Wings for the Game. Oh my God. Bam. Cash back.
It's on every single episode of the show that I listen to.
That's one of those ones I don't know how anybody's listening to this podcast and hasn't heard that. It's an ad read. I forgot that I did. I did that like months ago and immediately forgot it. And it's still, people have noticed, let's just say. I feel like, you know how me and DGB talk about playoff commercials every year. Now you hear these like little lines that drive everybody crazy every single year where it's, you know, frog protection or whatever. Like there's these like dumb little snippets that come out of the postseason broadcast because we see the same commercials over and over and over again. They just burrow themselves into people's brains. And I do feel pretty bad about becoming one of those myself because bam, cash wings for the game. Bam, cash back is it's everywhere. I'm really sorry.
You know what actually would have been a great commercial for the playoffs that they probably can't use for the playoffs now because it's been on so long is the Ryan O'Reilly UC Soros like financial goals commercial where he's like, UC, what are your financial goals? He's no goals.
The funny thing was too, that was actually like that wasn't even the script. That's what he just and he wasn't like it wasn't a play on words. He just truly is like my money in a shoebox like under keep that cool $5 million a year in a mattress in the house.
That's right. But that one's like I guess people could eventually get tired of no goals, but I find it funny every time I see it.
I'm glad you do. Yeah, that makes you the target demographic for BAM cashback because you can deal with that kind of repetition and not want to find out my address and come and beat my ass in my house. So thank you. And we'll talk about the playoff race in a second, but we have to start I think we're contractually obligated to start with the line brawl that took place last night. It's Rangers, it's Devils, it's Matt Rempe mainly versus Curtis McDermott. That was the heavyweight bout. It's obviously stemming from the dirty hit that Rempe laid on Jonas Siegenthaler a couple weeks back. This is retribution. We knew that Rempe was going to fight, right? We probably knew that he was going to fight McDermott, but I don't think anybody was quite anticipating a full line brawl, and that is exactly what we got last night.
The visual was incredible. I know this is something that a lot of people are ready to be done with, and I think that there's some evolved thought there that can go into that, but I got
to
say...
You don't have to qualify it, caveman. Let's go. You like
my
it.
My caveman friend loved this. I love the visual. I love the full, you know, I don't know that I would have loved as a coach of in this game. I don't know that I would have loved being without two defensemen aside for the entire thing. Every D in this game played crazy workload as a result.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, you get the first second. I think it's Lazar and VC are technically the first to make contact. So they're the only two that don't get ejected.
That might be my favorite part of the whole ordeal. Right. Like there's certainly a couple takeaways, a couple memorable bits here. I think upon watching the video again, VC, who was it? It was VC and Curtis Lazar. Those guys getting after it very quickly. I have some questions, and I know you do too, about the order of operations there for them.
Well, Sean thinks, just for everybody listening, Sean thinks that this is like orchestrated, that they're like, if we go first, we don't get tossed. Everybody who goes after gets tossed. I think it's two inexperienced fighters who don't feel the need to like prep. They're just, let's get it over with. Let's get right in there.
Either let's get it over with, or they're just psyched.
Yeah,
they're like,
right.
They're like, all right, this is, I've never been in line brawl before. Let's rock it. Yeah, there is the kind of protracted dance between McDermott and Rempe, which is, you know, par for the course, especially when you're talking about guys like that who are as insofar as much as fighters can exist in the NHL in 2024, those guys are fighters. And so they know what the people want to see. They know how to go about their business. They, you know, do the dance and all that stuff. So it took them a little bit longer to get into it.
It did. And you get the funny meme of I think it's McDermott's kind of in his crouch. He looks like he's doing some karate almost. He's squatted down.
Yeah, he's doing Tai Chi. He's tai doing chi, Patrick Swayze as Dalton Tai Chi from Roadhouse. That was clearly where he was drawing his inspiration. The other thing on Thursday morning that I've picked up on that I hadn't quite realized last night, as everybody does their Zapruder film analysis of the fight video, Igor Shesterkin was ready to throw down. Why else would he take off his blocker? We have unquestionable, inalienable footage of the dude crouched over, picking up his blocker after he realized that it wasn't going to happen. Someone needs to ask him about that. I want to hear from Shesterkin, because that's what would have taken that fight from a line brawl, in which we don't see much of very often, right? We saw the big one between Vancouver and Calgary, 10 or 11 years ago. We've had one since then, also in the Metro Division, I believe. But next level would have been the goalie fight. Now, I'm sure that the Rangers are thrilled that Shesterkin wasn't out there, you know, throwing bombs, because he's a very important part, of what they do. But whatever, caveman brain. I wouldn't mind seeing a goalie fight.
Sean, many have called our show the Letterman of the 2020s. And so I'm inclined to ask you for your top five things that those parades of players are doing for the remainder of the 2.5 hours after they've been ejected from this game.
Oh, God, that would be like a perfect Letterman top 10. Let's see. What's something topical that's happening right now? We can just throw in the mix.
Researching the 2024 election, planning their ballots.
Yeah, TikTok.
Yeah, add some little advocacy work.
Figuring out their A-list app for AMC theaters. Figuring out what the movie times are for Friday. Picking out picking out a new one.
Was this game in New York or New Jersey, by the way?
That's a good question. I didn't realize it at the start. It was at the Garden.
Okay. So they could just leave, pretty much.
Split.
I guess you could have done that in New Jersey, too. It's pretty close to the subway there, too.
Could have snuck out the back door and bought a pack of smokes at the Duane Reade, which is what I used to do at Madison Square Garden.
Is that Walgreens, by the way?
I think they're owned by the same people. Producer Jeff trying to find the difference between Taylor's version and the originals. I like that. Because Taylor Swift, of course, as we've established, will never give us a moment's peace. We're going to have to deal with reissues from her for the rest of our lives. But no, this is fun, man. I we're caveman brain, lizard brain, whatever it is. I have a lot of time for a line brawl. We'll just put it that way. If I get one every few years, that's enough. I don't need this to turn into something where, you know, needs to happen again whenever. I don't know if the Rangers and Devils probably don't play again, but we don't need to carry this over into next season. This can just be it, and we can all move on and say, oh, that was a funny, kind of interesting way to spend 15 minutes, and that can be that, right?
Absolutely. I personally have to say, I love that there was, I think it was 27 penalties in the first period. And obviously like 18 of those are in the first 2 seconds, two for the rest of the game. So the boys calmed down.
Mm-hmm.
Or the refs decided that they had already earned a full game's pay off of all the work they had to do in the first minute.
It also was a game that had some kind of stakes for the Rangers because they are in a President's Trophy race, and they were coming into it. They're 1 point ahead of Boston, right? So you want to get 2 points. The Devils are, you know, out of the playoff race. I think it's safe to say that they are, even though we're going to talk about this in a minute, the East is a quagmire. But I think it's probably safe. It's also safe to rule out the Devils, especially after their week, because they got no points against Pittsburgh, no points against the Rangers. It's safe to. Sad to say peace to them, but the Rangers have a lot to play for. It's the top seed in the conference. It's the best record in the league. And I think they were at a point last night, you know, based on the teams that were chasing them, primarily Boston and Dallas, where they needed to get two, and they did. So they stay out in front of that at least.
Yeah, top seed in the East gets the winner of the Turtle Derby, right? I mean, that's what you're playing for here, is that if you're the second division winner, basically, you're gonna get the Tampa Bay Lightning. And that does not look like a fun task at the moment. If you win the East, you are going to get one of the teams that are trying to go backward into the playoffs, which is much more desirable.
Did you watch Tampa-Toronto last night? Because that was the other big game on the schedule with some actual implications for seeding and whatnot in the East.
I did not. I saw Tampa earlier this week. They played Detroit, so I saw them on Monday night. It was actually a really good game. And the Lightning, obviously, you know, they beat the Leafs 4-1 last night. I think even having not watched this specific game, having seen enough of them recently, I think we can say that they have rounded into form and that they look like the kind of team that you do not want to play early in the playoffs, especially as your reward for winning a division.
What did you see from Vasilevskiy against the Wings? Because he feels like, you know, the Lightning as a team have been playing better basically since the trade deadline. Like some of the moves they made, I think we've talked about this in some capacity already. Duclair allowed them to drop Hagel down to the second line, which was just made their forward group make sense pretty much. So defensively, they've been a lot stronger. Vasilevskiy was benefiting that for a while, but now it seems like he's elevated his game and he's doing it on his own now too, which should be terrifying. That's the single biggest reason to be very, very fearful of the Lightning, is because that dude looks like himself in a way that he hasn't at any point this season until now.
Yeah, we've talked about, you know, I know a few weeks back we talked about Winnipeg and, you know, how much of this is Connor Hellebuyck versus this lineup, blah, blah, blah. And when we were debating Winnipeg's lineup, it was, well, they might be deep, but they don't really have the superstars at the top. So a lot of it falls to Hellebuyck, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tampa's kind of the scarier version of that, and that they're not as deep as Winnipeg, but they do have the stars at up top, and they have Vasilevskiy, who, you know, when he's on, is at least as good as Hellebuyck, if not the just very best goalie in the NHL. And so I find Tampa to be one of the most fascinating teams at this time of year, because they can do whatever they want. Mm-hmm. They can go toe to toe with anybody. They can play any way, even if they are not that deep in terms of their third and fourth lines. they have been through the wars and they know how to play that style of game that you have to play in the playoffs. And I agree with you. I think Vasilevsky looks ready to potentially carry a load for weeks, if not a month plus in the playoffs, if the rest of the team can get him through.
Yeah, I mean, he's been at, you know, 3 goals allowed or better in every game since March 14th, right? So we got 3-3-3-1. You know, There was an outlier there against the Kings, but he's been, we're approaching, you know, 3 weeks of him looking like the dude that was the best goalie in the league for a solid chunk there. So that's scary stuff for sure. And that again is why it's relevant when we're talking about the Rangers or the Bruins or whoever. Stay away from that team. If you're one of those, Carolina's in the mix too. There too, we should mention them at the top of the East. Get away from Tampa. Take your chances with Philly or Detroit or the Islanders. Or yes, this is not a joke. The Pittsburgh Penguins. And you want no parts of Andrei Vasilevsky when he's playing this way, right?
Correct. You know who else on the Lightning really caught? I mean, he's been a really good player for a long mm-hmm. time, but looks like he's leveled up as Anthony Cirelli. Mm-hmm. He should have had a hat trick in the game against Detroit. He had 2 different goals waved off. I think Detroit fairly fortunate on at least one. One, it was a pretty clear run into the goalie, but one was just kind of a camera angle thing that they got a little fortunate on. And he had 2 goals the night before that against the Islanders. If he is leveling up into being a legit number 2 playoff, like on a contender center, that's a really scary thing for the rest of the league. They pay him like one, so they need him to.
Yes,
but for a long time, he has been that kind of like shutdowny guy that maybe you're over the moon to have as your 3C, and you know, you move him and you maybe play second line minutes because of the matchups. Mm-hmm. But if he's going to be like a, you know, 55-60 point guy with Selke impacts, that's a terrifying thing for the rest of the league.
Absolutely. They pay him like one and they play him like one too. When you're on a line with Brandon Hagel and Steven Stamkos, like, solid defensive impacts aren't going to do it by themselves anymore. Like, you have to produce points. That's just the way that it goes. And Cirelli's breakout happened a few years ago when he was Selke caliber, right? He got votes and he deserved them. But, you know, last year was a little weird for him. It was the first one after signing that big contract. You know, what we're seeing now, man, he's 19 points, 22 assists. You know, he's looking better recently than he did at the start. You know, he's certainly scoring producing points at a higher pace. But he's on a scoring line. And also, like we said before, that one of the big factors for Tampa was that Stamkos, like, great as a player as he was, good as a player as he still is, you know, he's turning into a defensive liability. And Cirelli by himself wasn't enough to turn that truck around. But combined with Hagel, who's just a, you know, really, really good all around hockey player, that's a complete line now. And that's a big part of their success. So the Wings, meanwhile, it does feel like they're a lot of what's going on here revolves around them, right? Because they had that game on Monday. They got some big ones coming up. Seems like you're going to be coming to Pittsburgh for what is all of a sudden a relevant game next week. Like, what is the state of stuff for the Wings? Have things calmed down in the last 3 or 4 days when it seemed like they were really well and truly watching the wheels fall off there? Because it does. It seems like they won earlier this week. The vibes are at least a little bit better after some pretty tough going there, right?
Yeah, their month of March was absolutely horrible. They won 3 games the entire month. I think 3-11 is what that comes out to. And you're going to say, Max, surely a bunch of those losses were in OT. Only one of them, or 2 of them, sorry. One was OT, yeah. One was shootout. They left a lot of points on the table. They went from a position where they were 8 points up on a playoff spot to now they are, you know, they were at one point chasing this by a couple points. So morale was not high when I left the team in Carolina late last week. I leave. They pick up 3 points in 2 games at Florida and at Tampa. When I saw them again for the first time since Wednesday, yeah, spirits are a little higher. I think there's kind of a realization that of where they are. Now they get through this road trip. That road trip, I will say, was really tough. It was at Nashville, at Washington, at Carolina, at Florida, at Tampa. Like, mm-hmm. For stretches in the last week, it's bounced around, but those have all five been playoff teams.
Mm-hmm.
And now they will come home and get the Rangers, which is really tough. But then it's a little bit easier after that. It's Buffalo, it's Washington, it's Pittsburgh, and those aren't easy per se, but they're either home or they're not playoff teams. So I think they see an opportunity here to kind of grab the race, but opportunities all they had in the month of March, and they played without Don Larkin. I get it. It's really tough. It was a factor. But it has been tense times, I guess, is the best way to describe it around Detroit.
So there are two playoff spots that look like they're going to go to Metro Division teams, right? If you include third place in there, that's a factor. I'm looking at Dom's playoff projections. He actually just updated them like 20 minutes ago. Basically a dead heat between the Caps, the Wings, and the Flyers for playoff odds. They're all three of them are at, well, Caps and the Wings are at 49%. Flyers are at 48%. Islanders aren't far now, and they're at 42%. Then you have Pittsburgh hanging around on the peripheral at 11%. But Pittsburgh's chances come with a major asterisk because they're playing Washington tonight. They play the Islanders again, and then they're playing Detroit next week. So it's a big ask because that's a very mediocre team. But if Pittsburgh finds a way to get 5 or 6 points out of that stretch, man, they're going to be in it too. Hard to believe.
Yeah, honestly, so many of these teams I have counted out at various points this season. Ironically, the Devils are the one that I held on to forever. Mm-hmm. And they're finally the one that's actually looks like they're actually out of this. But mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, Pittsburgh, we wrote Pittsburgh's obituary a week after the trade deadline. We wrote Washington's obituary.
I did that on two separate pods. But it's crazy. Pittsburgh's dead. We talked about it. McIndoe and I talked about it, and they're not like you. It could, should people be grossed out by that fact? Probably, because it's not a good sign for the rest of the conference, really, or at least that middle class in the conference. But it's true. Also, probably should watch the top of the Atlantic Division. I think it might be too late for any of this to matter, but Florida's playing poorly. Boston is, you know, not stacking wins, and the Leafs just whatever lost some ground to the Lightning. So that whole situation might be more in flux than we realized. Like we're not seeing nightly shifts in matchups or nightly shifts in the standings, but everything's condensed enough over the last few days to make it even more interesting. And there's a whole nother conference to talk about. Did you know that? There is a Western Conference. People forget that.
There was only a Western Conference, it seemed like, on Wednesday, although I guess we spent the entire first segment talking about the two East games, so maybe...
Who cares?
Maybe not. Did you watch Dallas-Edmonton? I did watch a bit of that one.
I was flipping around. I watched a chunk of it. I did see Wyatt Johnston's 30th goal of the season, yeah. Which is... feel like Dallas in a nutshell, right? Like they're like that class of guys, whether it's Johnston, whether it's we saw from Stankoven earlier, whether it's Thomas Harley, that like early 20s cohort of players has brought so much to that franchise and Johnston. I honestly, until he scored the goal, I don't think I realized that he was as close to 30 as he was. I knew that he was maybe knocking on the door, but I don't think I knew that he was sitting on 29. So 30 goals for a 20-year-old man, that's impressive stuff, and it's important stuff for the Stars.
I just love, you know, the Stars 17 draft class is like, that's like the modern Marvel, right? It's Haskin and Ottinger, Robertson. It's not going to be quite that level, but I do love that they got Wyatt Johnson and Logan Stankoven in the same class in 2021. Like that is, it's just another one of those like, oh, well, if you do that, you're going to be a good team really fast.
If you get one of those guys outside of the first round too, like,
yeah, and they did.
brother. Not bad.
And Greshnikov's the guy they turned into Chris Tanev, by the way. Greshnikov was also one of their picks in that draft, and they turned him into Chris Tanev.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
Yeah, I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
All right, we're back. It's time to check in on the awards race. I feel like we haven't done that in a couple weeks, and there has been movement. Maybe not quite as much as you would think, especially in the Norris. But we'll focus on the two big ones. We'll focus on Hart and Norris. Max, let's start with number one. Where are you on the who's at the top? Who's at the top, and has it changed for you in the over the last 2 weeks? Let's say.
It hasn't changed for me. It's the toughest Hart race since I've. Mm-hmm. been voting, right? Like it's I don't want to tip my ballot too much here. Here's what I'll mm-hmm. say, that the of the main contenders, I think you can make really strong cases for at least four or five guys. I think the Jets slide over the last recent stretch. You could take that one of two ways. You could take it to hurt Connor Hellebuck's candidacy because the Jets are sliding, or you could take it to say, well, this is kind of what everyone was talking about. When Connor Hellebuck is not superhuman, they are not a, you know, division winning team. Not to say he's
yeah, but then the flip side is that he hasn't been that good either.
Exactly. Like, right.
Part of the reason they're he's very important. It's not most important player. I think there is a difference between most important and most valuable. Connor Hellebuck is probably more important to his team than anybody else. But that goes for good and that goes for ill. And I think that's what we've seen over the last couple weeks, because he hasn't been great. And the end result is, you know, whatever, they're in a pretty bad spot at the moment.
Yeah, so maybe you dock him down, but the other four, like, it just keeps ascending, right? It's Nathan MacKinnon, who has been as consistently dominant as anybody in the NHL this year. It's Nikita Kucherov, who somehow leveled up, and nobody can figure out how at this age Nikita Kucherov found a way to level up in his game. It's Austin Matthews, who I don't think he's getting to 70, but I think he's going to get to 65 goals. And it's Connor McDavid, who overcomes this slow start and might catch Kucherov. Like, this is as good a Hart Trophy race as I can ever remember as a voter, which, granted, I'm not that old, but in my voting tenure is the best I can remember.
It just shows how much of this is based on hair splitting, right? Because Matthews has 63. If he gets seven in his last seven games, you know, obviously he'll hit a number that we haven't seen in quite a while. Dom actually had a little bit in 16 stats that published this morning about, you know, how often have we seen Austin Matthews score seven goals in seven games? Like, not out of the question. It's more possible for him than anybody else in the league at the moment. So we'll see how that goes. It just feels like it's gonna hinge on who finishes with the most points. I think that's where, you know, that's how close these guys are, especially when you're talking about Kucherov and McKinnon and McDavid.
That Connor guy.
Whatever his name is. Who didn't have 0 points last night. What a bum. He's now 4 points behind Kucherov, who stacked up a few last night as well. So that is something to watch. I feel like people just aren't going to know how to differentiate all that much between, especially if it ends up being, you know, Kucherov and McDavid, because like there's no wrong choice. I think that's one of the blessings here. If you're someone who has to worry about making this call, is that like I don't think anybody's going to vote for Kucherov or McDavid or McKinnon and come out of it getting slammed for it, because all three are really good.
They are, and that's definitely how you try to console yourself. But like it is something that like it, I don't know, this is the kind of thing that kind of earworms, and I can't stop thinking about it until I file the ballot. Really, like a week after I file the ballot, and is when I can kind of purge it. So let me take you into like what I'm struggling with in this race right now. Again, I'm trying to not tip my hand here. Nathan McKinnon's the most dominant player I've watched this year. When I've watched him, I think this is the MVP. How much should I care about that versus a round number like we haven't seen in forever, like what Austin Matthews is doing? Like what I think
I think Matthews is out, honestly. Like I think at this point we need to talk about the other three guys as the primary candidates.
Okay. So McDavid to drive the Oilers back from how they started, and in addition to that crazy points production stat, his expected goal share, Sean, is 62.12, yeah, which is bananas, right? That's unheard of. And then you have Kucherov, who I think falls a little bit behind in that expected goal share stat.
His defensive impacts are just not on par with the rest of those guys, or with those other two guys. And that's the point where you're like, okay, maybe I can eliminate him. But then the flip side is like, well, what if he wins the scoring title by 8 points? You know, like what if, or who knows? Like, is it that crazy? I don't know.
And when we talk about like most valuable to his team, I think it's totally possible the Lightning would have missed the playoffs this year without this kind of performance from Nikita Kucherov. And I guess you can maybe, I'm sure you could say that for the Oilers without McDavid. I get that at some point, like you get to this semantic place, but for a team to be in the Lightning's kind of fragile, delicate position, and for him to have willed them the way that he has, a lot of it's on the power play, which counts, by the way.
Counts.
We rule out the power play a lot. I don't think we should do that in award voting. So that's kind of where I'm at, is like, it, to me, when I watch McKinnon, I see the most dominant player that I've watched this year in terms of just taking over games, willing an elite team the way he has, and he has the numbers to back this up. When I watch McDavid, I see something very similar, and it's crazier numbers. Matthews has this potential round number that we have not seen in a really long time, and Kucherov, I think, is this kind of indispensable, like, where would this team kind of be without him doing what he's doing thing. And that is a stellar field of candidates. I agree with you. You can't go wrong with it. No one's going to kill you on any of these picks, but I do want to get it right.
Which isn't always true. Like there are fields and candidates in the past where it's like, there've been landmines where you're like, if you vote for dude X, there's going to be a portion of the public that's going to rake you across the coals for it. And I don't feel like that particular trap is in place. I really have been thinking about Kucherov a lot, because I think the danger for Kucherov is that people are going to look at the way Tampa's played over the last month, and they're going to, by all appearances, go into the playoffs on a heater and look like themselves, and have Andrei Vasilevsky playing well, and yada yada. This is not the 2020 Lightning. This is not the 2021 Lightning. This is not even the 2023 Lightning. We've seen a step back from Stamkos. We've seen Kucherov take more of, you know, account for more of the production when it comes to him and Braden Point. Hedman hasn't been, you know, Norris caliber Victor Hedman. Sergachev gets hurt. They were a bad defensive team for the majority of the season, and they had to deal with Vasilevskiy being hurt for the first 8 weeks or whatever. So if that's the barometer, if it's like which player played the greatest role in getting his team to the postseason, I think it might be Kucherov. But in terms of individual merit and individual greatness this season, I think it's the other two guys. So it's sort of, you know, flip a coin. Try not to lose sleep over it, but I can guarantee you that, especially if you, my boy, are casting a ballot, sleep will be lost.
Yeah,
big anxiety hours for Max when it's award voting time. And it's
2 a.m. me waking Allison. What do you think, McKinnon or McDavid?
Roman Yossi really played well going down the stretch. Is he enough to take the
vote? He has played really well down the stretch. Let's pivot this to Norris, actually. Yes, this is a good jump point because
segue, baby.
That's right. All year, this has felt like Quinn Hughes' award. And it has taken kind of a steady climb from Makar and Yossi to remind everybody that they belong in the same conversation. I don't know if I am just all in on the Hughes narrative, though, but I am finding it hard to see myself voting for someone other than
Quinn Absolutely. Hughes. Absolutely.
I think part of this is just Vancouver, right? Like, mm-hmm. Vancouver's the kind of surprise team of the NHL in a lot of ways this season. And I, you know, there's a lot of really good players on Vancouver, obviously, mm-hmm. but I have a hard time finding anyone other than Quinn Hughes who I can say I think has been as responsible for the leap that they've taken.
Yeah, and you don't, especially this last month or however long it's been, they've been, you know, the performance has fallen off a bit. And you can attribute that to a lot of things. You can say Thatcher Demko's hurt. You can say Elias Pettersson's not producing. All that's true. But the top end talent, the guys that got them there, and the guys that are going to make it, who they're going to live and die on once the postseason rolls around, of the three, Pettersson, Demko, Hughes, he's the one who's held up his end of the bargain. Because over the last month, he's still up over 60% in expected goals percentage. Actual goals percentage, he's at 65. Like, there hasn't been that much. Have they dropped off as a team? Yeah. Has Quinn Hughes dropped off individually? Not as much. And I think that dude built up more than enough equity over the course of the season, you know, from October to late March, where you can't slag him all that much for a little bit of a downtick at the end.
Well, and last night's kind of a perfect example, right? Should the Canucks have needed a late push to beat the Arizona Coyotes 2-1? No. Did the first goal come from Quinn Hughes? And did Quinn Hughes set up the second goal with 2 minutes left to win it? Yes, he did.
He sure did.
You know, and honestly, as I'm talking about this, does Quinn Hughes belong in the five spot over Connor Hellebuyck on an MVP ballot by this logic?
No, you're not allowed to vote for defensemen or goalies. We know this.
They have their own awards. I've put a goalie first on my MVP ballot before.
I know, and that's why I was bringing up Hellebuyck. Who was that? Was it Hellebuyck? Shesterkin.
It was Shesterkin.
Yep, that's right.
I thought he was unbelievable 2 years ago.
He was. Yeah. He was. But yeah, I think it's just this is just a conversation point, and this is where we're guilty of certain things too, where it's like, has Roman Yossi been great of late? Like, absolutely. Is he gonna finish at a point per game again? Like, certainly seems that way, right? But season's not just 2 weeks at the end of it, right? It's just the way it goes. So yeah, I don't know. And also, like, it's so funny that not to knock Cale Makar because he's not having a bad season or anything, but it is funny that like there have been those a few stretches for him where it just seems like he's played himself out of the top spot, right? Which is weird. That's not something you would expect from that dude.
and he's numbers statistically, you can, these guys look identical, Makar and Hughes do. Mm-hmm. One thing that I've kind of struggled with, and I was talking about this with somebody earlier this week, like, do you think that the Norris winner can be on the same team as a guy who finishes top two or three in MVP voting?
Can the Norris,
can those two things make sense at the same time?
Norris winner. I think so, but it's that's also tough. That's
it's like a mental roadblock on one of the two things, whichever one it is, right? It's like, you know, are they the MVP if they're playing X percentage of their minutes with the Norris winner? Like, how much do we factor that? Are they the Norris if they're, you know, getting to play with the MVP? I don't know, you know?
It's the same roadblock that stops people from voting for, like, by the letter of the law, the Hart ballot should be just, the Hart final should be five goaltenders every year. That's just the way, like, it could be.
Yeah, it could be, yes.
Definitionally, there's no other position has as much value to a team as a goaltender does. But that'd be boring, and that's certainly not the way that, you know, that's not the way that people approach it. So, theoretically, you should be allowed to have a guy who wins the Norris on, you know, on a team with a Hart winner, right? Yeah. But it doesn't seem like it's in the cards either. I think that's just one of those things that intellectually is possible, but in practice, when it comes time to actually cast the votes and count them up, it just doesn't seem like something that would happen.
That's kind of where I'm at too. I can get myself there on logic, right? The Norris doesn't say anything about most valuable to team. It's just who's the best all-around defenseman in the NHL, right? And there's certainly a case that that's Cale Makar every single year.
Brother.
There are also practicalities that come into, you know, you look at your ballot and you go, does it feel right to have the MVP and the Norris from the same team? Sometimes it is, but I don't know. It's something that I'll run into, I'm sure, when I'm agonizing over this.
Mm-hmm. Coming up in the next segment, we have a spirited debate over the Lady Bing candidates. Stay tuned. Just kidding.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other topics, and managing it as one big, juicy investment. Now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
All right, we're back. Final segment. Maxi, we had a great torts moment on Wednesday. I feel like we've had several of them over the course of the season. The first I saw of his little soliloquy was from Kevin Kurz, who tweeted it out in its entirety on Wednesday. It's just kind of a look into what makes Tort, like, it's the Tortorella manifesto. It's like his mission statement as a coach. He said a bunch of stuff, but the relevant part is this. If a player is going to quit on me, or players are going to quit on me because I'm trying to make them better people or better athletes, you've got the wrong damn coach here and you got the wrong damn people here. My job is to push athletes, which is true. And also not something you hear publicly from coaches all that much. And it's just a reminder. I've said it before, man. I'm a total sucker for Torts. I think he makes a ton of sense in Philly for a variety of reasons. And I think, you know, this last little swoon notwithstanding, I think there's a lot to be said for having a dude like that in place at the top of an organization. I'm a sucker for him. I can't help it.
I was talking about this with Allison. We saw the original rant come on TV, whatever night it was, Tuesday night.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he talks about soft and all this stuff and certain guys that don't know what they need to do and all this stuff. And we were talking about, like, you know, would you like to kind of play for that? And I don't think I would like it, but I think I would respond to it. And that's kind of like, that's kind of the mission statement, right? It's like, I think I'd be extremely uncomfortable for the entirety of the time. And I think it would yield my best results. And I have to be honest about that.
I think that's where I'm at. And I also think part of me would kind of like it. I respond to getting yelled at. Like, that's the way it is. That's always been true. Like, we had talked about this. I asked Frank Corrado about this on the Wednesday show a couple weeks ago. Like, what kind of personality type do you think thrives under John Tortorella? Because Frank played for him, and Frank, you know, got along well with him, and Frank felt like he, you know, meshed on a coach player level with him. And he said, basically, I'm paraphrasing here, but he was like, it's either guys who don't care at all, or guys who care a ton and respond to getting yelled at, right? Like older guys who are just like steady as she goes, unflappable. It's just like water over the bridge. They tune them out. And then there's also another class of dude that, you know, hears that sort of stuff, and for better or worse, I don't want to crack open the psychology of why people respond to John Tortorella, but, you know, he gets the most out of a certain personality type. And I don't know.
It's a scene in Miracle, right? It's I want you to be a hockey player. I am a hockey player, right? Like that's what it is. You know, you fire them up and you get them going. And if you have to be their enemy for a minute to give them something to go hard for, that's what it is.
Some player, was it Morgan Frost? This is a good question. There was a great quote a couple days ago from, oh my God, I'm forgetting the specifics of it, which is very embarrassing. But some player, like, to the media said, like, he made a mistake in overtime, and he was like, hey, like, excuse my language, I effed up, like, right? And I cost my team. And that's the sort of stuff where I think I look at that and I'm like, that's accountability. That's Tortorella stuff. And that is like goes hand in glove with the sort of stuff we heard from him a couple of days ago. So I don't know, man. I know it's because I'm getting old or what, but I'm a total sucker for all that stuff. And yeah, We'll see if it actually works, because the Flyers suck right now. So that's the flip side of the coin, right? Like they're hanging on for dear life, not just to third place in the Metro Division, but to a wild card spot, period. All this stuff makes a ton of sense whenever the results are where they need to be. And Tortorella, just by nature, by his track record, like, he opens himself up for criticism whenever he says this sort of stuff, because sometimes it doesn't work, but whatever. I don't care. We need a goal scoring draft update. I don't think we've given the people one of those since we actually made our picks back on February 22nd. We each pick three. It's for some context as to what was going on in the league whenever we had this little exercise. Austin Matthews had just hit 50 goals. Connor McDavid was in a little bit of a goal scoring skid, but that was when he was still piling up a ridiculous amount of points. And we wanted to see who would, you know, the premise, Max, right, was that we just needed to pick who do you think is going to have the most goals from now until the end of the season. And the results have been interesting. It's pretty close. You are in the lead, unfortunately.
That is unfortunate. Also unfortunate is that we let you get the individual player who actually has the most goals at the third pick, and that's McKinnon.
I feel like I should get some kind of award for that. You have 30. You had Leon Draisaitl with 12, Mikko Rantanen with 10, Connor McDavid with 8. I am in second with 26 overall. That's McKinnon with 14, Sam Reinhart with 8, and Elias Pettersson, who's got the fewest. That's why I have the guy with the most goals and I'm in second place, is because Elias Pettersson has the fewest of any player we picked. He's got four. So I'm at 26. Haley, of course, is in last place. Pasternak with 10. Kucherov with 6. Sidney Crosby with 8 for 24. So we are within... There's a 6-goal span between first and second. I think a lot of outcomes are still on the table here.
When did we do this draft?
February 22nd.
February 22nd. Hang on. I'm going to pull this up
mm-hmm.
and see if we left anybody really bad, like really notable on the board.
I'm sure we did.
Oh, yeah. Actually, okay. So I lied. So McKinnon does not have the most. He has the most in our league.
Yeah.
Zach,
right.
Zach Hyman has 18 since then. Braden Point, 15. And Philip Forsberg and Timo Meier both have 15 apiece. 18 for Zach Hyman in that span. Imagine if you drafted Zach Hyman over Elias Pettersson.
It's a lot of hard work from Zach Hyman, baby. All right. I think that's it for us, Maxie. Do you have anything you want to close out on?
No, I thought this is really fun. This is the first time I've covered a playoff, like serious playoff race this deep into a season. And wow, is it a lot more interesting than the alternative? A lot of adrenaline. And I guess I see why you guys all like this stuff, huh?
Speak for yourself. It's fine. The important thing is you're going to be in Pittsburgh on Wednesday. If it seems like for Wings Pens, it's a big game. Don't really care about it. I'm just psyched to have dinner with you at some point next week. So that's fine.
That's right. It'll be great. We'll hit our old haunts.
Man, name redacted. We don't want any crazy fans coming up to us. It's at some of the bars we're going to hit. You know, that's we just right. want to live. Just leave us that's alone. Right. Leave us be. Good show, brother. We'll talk to you soon. Haley, like I said, she'll be back. She'll be back at some point, but she's got more important things to do, as per usual. Thank you, folks, for listening to us. Thank you for listening to the show in general. Leave a 5-star rating and review it if you're enjoying it and that's your thing. Next show is on Monday with Mendez, Laz, and CJ and Pierre LeBrun are back for their segment as well. You don't have to listen to me on Monday either. So congratulations, and talk to you soon.